Following are comments on Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus, scenes 2 through 6. Scene 2. I fear me nothing will reclaim him now. The first scholar fears that Faustus will be imperiled by the influence of Cornelius and Valdes. In scene 2, a pair of scholars come to visit Faustus at his home, and Wagner puts them off with silly bantering. But he delivers enough information to make the scholars anxious. He tells them that Faustus is dining with Valdes and Cornelius. These men, says the first scholar, are, quote-unquote, infamous through the world, line 28. Both scholars fear that there is nothing they can do to help Faustus, but they plan to try anyhow. We may extrapolate from this information that what Dr. Faustus is doing is hardly new. Engaging in necromancy is more of a fashion than we might have thought, as Yogi Berra is supposed to have said about some club or restaurant. That place isn't popular anymore. Everybody goes there. It seems that Marlowe is at pains to point out that Faustus is not quite the trailblazer in necromancy or black magic as he was in other, more respectable pursuits like divinity, law, and medicine. The first of the two scholars is especially alarmed, saying, quote-unquote, I fear me nothing will reclaim him now, line 32. Scene 3. Why, this is hell, nor am I out of it. Mephistopheles levels with Faustus, but the doctor is too intoxicated with grandiose expectations to listen. In scene 3, Faustus summons up Mephistopheles with great dollops of Latin. But as it turns out, with regard to the form that this infernal spirit takes, Faustus can't handle the truth. Quote unquote, I charge thee, return and change thy shape. Thou art too ugly to attend on me. Go and return an old Franciscan friar. That holy shape becomes a devil best. Lines 23 through 26. That is a fine dig against Franciscan friars, but it doesn't hide Faustus's terror from us. The man wants access to evil, but he doesn't want it to look like what it really is. At least, not too directly. We may be reminded of John Milton's Paradise Lost, Book 1, lines 792 through 798, in which the narrator describes the bad angels meeting for the first time in a hellish conclave. Quote unquote, but far within, and in their own dimensions like themselves, the great seraphic lords and cherubim in close recess and secret conclave sat. If, as St. Augustine says, evil is not grounded in authentic being, meaning God, it stands to reason that it would not have a permanent form. Milton's devils to adore for deities, as he called them then, are shapeshifters and inveterate soul grifters. In a conversation with Faustus, Mephistopheles calls the soul of a human being, quote-unquote, glorious, line 46. This should remind us of the important place that humankind occupied in the much-celebrated Great Chain of Being. A person, according to that well-developed concept, occupies a place between the material and spiritual dimensions of the universe, with all the capacities of the animals and angels. To destroy even a single human soul, suggests Mephistopheles, would be almost like repeating the original fall. How can he not be excited at the prospect of suborning the clever, superior mortal Faustus? As an aside, two modern authors who address the Great Chain of Being are Arthur O. Lovejoy in The Great Chain of Being and E.M.W. Tillyard, spelled T-I-L-L-Y-A-R-D, in The Elizabethan World Picture. It's good to know that although Mephistopheles will later exult in how devious he has been with Faustus, for the most part he tells him the truth when asked a direct question. For example, Faustus asks him about Lucifer, and Mephistopheles frankly admits that this great angel was cast down to perdition because of his, quote-unquote, expiring pride and insolence, line 65. Not a good look, that. When Faustus tries to pin Mephistopheles down with regard to what he is doing, ranging freely on the earth, Mephistopheles again answers honestly, quote unquote, "Why, this is hell, nor am I out of it," line 73. Later, Milton would endow his pseudo-heroic Satan with the brilliant lines, quote unquote, "Which way I fly is hell, myself am hell, and in the lowest deep, a lower deep still threatening to devour me opens wide." Paradise Lost, Book 4, lines 75 through 77. Milton may have learned a thing or two from Marlowe, and it leads him to the idea that a devil like Lucifer would be rifled by inner doubts, tormented by an infinite regress of his guilty consciousness. There is apparently some room for honesty, then, in Marlowe's Mephistopheles, just as there is in Milton's Satan. More than one critic has noted that at times, Faustus the intellectual and Mephistopheles the wizened servant of Lucifer are almost like brothers. They have this robust but limited capacity to reflect on themselves in common. Mephistopheles even asks Faustus to leave behind this new and dangerous pursuit of his, necromancy. But that is not to be. Why, incidentally, does Faustus ask for 24 years and not some much longer stretch of time? Perhaps he asks for this amount because it was about half of an ordinary lifespan in Marlowe's time. It's hard to say, really. Faustus may know full well that he will not get a promise of immortality, for that would be beyond even Lucifer to grant. So at base, he's asking that the second half of his life be a great deal more extraordinary than the first half. Intoxicated with excitement, Faustus immediately claims that he will accomplish stupendous geopolitical feats. Quote unquote, "I'll join the hills that bind the Afric shore and make that country continent to Spain, and both contributory to my crown." Lines 104 through 106. Although he does later accomplish a few things along political lines, Faustus will fall far short of this delusional glory that he describes. As mentioned earlier, he really doesn't have the stamina for such exploits. Scene 4. "I will presently raise up two devils to carry thee away." Wagner parodies both Mephistopheles and Faustus. Scene 4 is instructive about the function of the comical interludes in this play. Wagner repeats with Robin a power move that resembles Mephistopheles' successful attempt to compromise and enthrall Faustus' soul. For Wagner, the attempt to buy Robin's service is not an unqualified success. Robin agrees to serve Wagner, but not before subjecting him to considerable mockery for his desire to assert power. Wagner, seeming to address us and not Robin, muses that the poor fellow is practically starving and so would, quote-unquote, "give his soul to the devil for a shoulder of mutton, though it were blood raw," lines 8 through 9. Robin, also possibly speaking to us only, responds with, quote-unquote, "not so neither. I'd need to have it well roasted and good sauce to it if I pay so dear, I can tell you." Lines 10 through 11. And so it goes. This, of course, makes Faustus look ridiculous. We might even say that as the famous observation of Karl Marx goes, quote unquote, "history repeats itself, the first time as tragedy and the second time as farce." Marx didn't say this as quoted, but the quotation summarizes his assertions in his 1852 essay, The 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte. Scene 5. "The god thou servest is thine own appetite." Faustus settles his fears and goes through with his contract with Mephistopheles. In scene 5, Faustus still seems intoxicated with his choice and just as energized as when we last encountered him. He admits to wavering, but quickly argues himself out of that wavering. Quote unquote, "The god thou servest is thine own appetite, wherein is fixed the love of Beelzebub. To him I'll build an altar and a church, and offer lukewarm blood of newborn babes." Lines 10 through 13. By his own admission, then, his career as a great magician and commander of ill spirits is not due to any exalted motive or impulse. Rather, the choice owes much to a common failing, the perversion of the will and intellect, or rational faculty, by unregulated appetites. Faustus soon learns that he must ratify his contract with Mephistopheles by, quote-unquote, a deed of gift with thine own blood, for that security craves Lucifer. Lines 35 through 36. And what will Mephistopheles do for him once he signs on the blood-streaked dotted line? Mephistopheles says he will, quote-unquote, give thee more than thou hast wit to ask. Line 46. This constitutes for Faustus a promise to expand his horizons beyond what he's ever known. A pattern strikes up at this point when Faustus, whose blasphemous utterance, quote-unquote, consummatum est, is followed by expressions of fear and doubt. The New Mermaid's note points out that the reference is to Christ's final words on the cross in John 19:30. For a moment, Faustus regrets signing the contract, and Mephistopheles finds it convenient to distract him from his doubts and fears. This bad servant says, quote-unquote, I'll fetch him somewhat to delight his mind, line 80. He sends in some devils who offer Faustus, quote-unquote, crowns and rich apparel. They perform a dance and leave. The distracting spectacle works, and Faustus hands over his damnable scroll to Mephistopheles. Once Faustus signs the deed of gift, what is his first question for his infernal servant? He wants to know all about hell, his future digs when the 24 years are up. As usual, Mephistopheles answers honestly enough, saying, quote-unquote, hell hath no limits, nor is circumscribed in one self place, but where we are is hell, and where hell is, there must we ever be. Lines 118 through 122. Faustus offers the specious assertion that, quote-unquote, hell's a fable. Line 126. But he must know already that this is not true, since he's been conversing with and summoning devils. He seems delusional in this regard, and the phrase cognitive dissonance comes readily to mind in describing his psychological state. Mephistopheles wards off this ridiculous ploy and does the same with the doctor's demand for a wife. A woman devil is sent his way, and this visitation, along with Mephistopheles' contemptuous remarks about marriage as, quote-unquote, a ceremonial toy, at line 145, is enough to put all thought of marriage out of Faustus' mind. It had better be, since, as Mephistopheles well knows, marriage would require participation in a sacrament. That's a no-go zone for a man who has willingly sold his soul to the devil. And of course, Mephistopheles can have nothing to do with it. He next offers Faustus the best possible diversion. A book of magic spells to delight him. Who doesn't like a book of magic spells? Scene 6. Do but speak what thou'lt have me to do. Robin has got hold of Faustus' conjuring book and can read it. In scene 6, the comic interlude is given to Robin and a character named Dick. Robin is busy trying to learn the spells in a conjuring book he's pilfered from Faustus. The trouble is, he's not much of a reader. Both men head for the tavern. Once again, Robin's motive is not so different from that of Faustus. Both pursue their pleasures. It's worth noting that Robin's line, quote-unquote, do but speak what thou'lt have me to do, is almost a direct quotation from the words of Saul, later St. Paul, in Acts 9:6, after he's been struck temporarily blind on his way to Damascus. Lord, what wilt thou that I do? Says Saul. Geneva Bible from BibleGateway.com. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I've used the 2018 New Mermaids edition of Marlowe's Dr. Faustus.
Okay, Penelope, I'll be right there.